Two more old friends I met yesterday. Nancy, you know it's getting farther. Come on along up here. It's getting farther down the line each time. Isn't it something?
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me? My name is Veronica. It's really not, but I want to be sure everybody's awake back there because it's getting kind of warm. I belong to the Westbury group of Al-Anon. I'm sorry. Which I joined just a little over 6 years ago. And that very night, I joined the Red Ring Club as well. I don't know if there are any other members here, but what you do is you take all the literature you can find, and you go home, and you lock yourself in the bathroom, and you stay up and read it till about 5 o'clock. Now, if you're well enough to put the lid down first, you can't join. I wasn't well enough. I felt that night that I had taken all the steps but five. And that was only because there was no one else there. And I admitted to a shortcoming. Vanity. I didn't used to wear my glasses. And that's how I found myself married to an alcoholic. I did not rest on my ring, however. I went to many more meetings. And got much more literature, because I did not go to Westbury the very first night. And the group I did go to did not have every single thing that was to be had. And I didn't rest until I felt I had found every single thing there was to be had. And then I discovered that you could go to open AA meetings. And I did this. And they have a lot more literature. And when I got my hands on the big book, I got the red ring with clusters. Even though I had read all this wealth of knowledge, my husband took a dim view of going to AA. He took an even dimmer view of my going to Al-Anon. But I went anyway. And eventually I simmered down enough to realize what the name of the game was and to give up on him, at least temporarily, and to concentrate on myself. And I worked to the best of my ability, honestly, at that time, the first three steps. And somewhere in there, amazingly enough, my husband did go to AA. And it really didn't make too much of a ripple, because I had come to realize what I had been doing to my children, and I was trying to undo that a little. But life did improve overall. And the first thing you know, simply by going to my group, I became a senior member. Now that is a position of some eminence. And there are all kinds of souls to be saved. And you tend to slack off on your own. And I guess that's about what I did. And about 3 years ago, several things happened to me. My baby sister, who wasn't quite 25, died as a direct result of alcoholism. And I couldn't accept it. I was quite pregnant at the time. And then I had the baby. I got the detachment part straightened out after a while. I detached from the problem, not the person. And then I became chairman of the Southern Assembly of New York, which was in its infancy. And my life became completely, totally unmanageable. because I had never been to an assembly meeting. And I wanted this to be the best little old assembly that there was. And it was very difficult. And I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what. And I took to sitting in my clubhouse again, but I put the lid down. I did make some progress. And I brooded, and I wanted to blame somebody. So guess who I blamed? My husband. He didn't guess. Because it was all his fault, because his sponsor's wife had suggested me for GR. That had led to committee man within about a week, and chairman in about another 2 weeks. So if you trace it back, that's all Johnny's fault. And I worked up a big resentment. Oh, it was a glorious one. And I said, in all honesty, he has really progressed in his program much faster and much finer than I have. No fair. And then I had to rationalize a little, and I said, of course, he had further to go. But about that time, I didn't know what to do about it, really. I dimly sensed two differences. A, he had a sponsor. I didn't. B, he had worked to the best of his ability all of the steps. But I didn't know what to do about either of these things. You see, I was the head lady. And there's nowhere to go from there. At least there wasn't, in my opinion. But about that time, a marvelous gal moved to New York, and she had been in Al-Anon in several states. She happened to visit our group. And really, if we had a banner with a figurehead, I would vote for her to be up on that banner. Because, to me, she is Mrs. Al-Anon. So I gave up my bowling to go to the group that she went to and asked her to be my sponsor. She doesn't drive, so if I didn't get to her, it was out of the question. And I really started all over again. And to supplement this, we started a step group at about that time. And I went back over those first three steps. They were different. And I really took the fourth, honestly, for the first time in depth, not just, you know, look at that character defect sheet. And I took the fifth with her. And I felt I had taken the sixth and so on and on and on. And for a while, my life improved. My inner life, this is, slightly. And then all of a sudden, I was in a big mess again. And I said, her name is Nancy, too. And I said, Nancy, you know, what am I doing wrong? And she said, well, when you're having trouble, you just got to go back and start over. So I did. And nothing changed too radically until the fifth step. And evidently, this doesn't apply to everybody, but it applied to me. I had, as I said, taken the fifth step. I had admitted to myself and to her, but my ego was such that I felt God was tuned into me all the time, just waiting breathlessly, and I had not admitted it to him. And when I did that, I really felt kind of monkey off the back kind of feeling. And I was able to go on, and the same thing applied in the seventh step in spades. Because I realized that I had not taken the seventh step, which is humbly admitted to God. I hadn't. I had attended a seventh step meeting, and I had read just about everything there was to be read on the seventh step. But reading is not doing. And it was so simple. I just did it. And it made such a difference. Now when I take my nightly inventory, it doesn't take hours. And it's not the same old thing over and over, only, you know, 19 instances of the same old thing. So if anybody is having trouble, I recommend that you go back and make sure you read it properly and then did it. We're also supposed to cover the eighth step. And this wasn't very difficult for me. I got the clue very early on of what had happened to my children and that I had done most of it because my husband was either not in residence or not really with us. And I had been their living example of what a grown-up should be. And of course, I had rather let them down in that regard. I also had a list myself. Just for starters, I had physically abused myself so that at 5'3", I weighed 165 pounds. I used to sit and eat potato chips, drink Pepsi, shove in a Hershey ball with nuts, maybe. And if I had a pang about this and the fact that there was no green in there, I would say this is my recreation. And I just got fatter and fatter and fatter. That was just one thing that I did to myself. My own immediate family, my mother and father, my brothers and sisters, I had just cut off with no explanation because I didn't want them to see what was going on. So, of course, they had to go on the list. And my husband's family had to join the list because I had done... To the lucky ones, I had done that. The second part wasn't quite as easy as the listing part. Oh, I forgot my husband in there. That must be something Freudian. I had to put my husband's name on the list, too. I had perpetrated quite a few injuries on his sleeping body, and sometimes on his conscious body, too. I've always believed that the best defense is a good offense. And I was willing, of course, to make amends to my children. And once I realized what I had done to myself, except in the matter of diet, I was willing to try and do something about that. And to my husband's family, some of them were no longer with us, so I couldn't do anything about that, I knew. And to my family. And after a while, I was even willing to make a few amends to him. I do recommend to anybody who has just done the first and the 12th, as they say, that you do look into the others, because it has made such a difference in my inner life, I just can't tell you. On the surface, I don't know if anybody else knows this, because I had become pretty good at not saying anything, mumbling to myself or singing to myself or what have you. But I think I was working on an ulcer, really, and that would have been rather ironic, because I haven't had a drink since about 1952. That's about all I have to say now. Thank you for listening. And I'd like to present to you my husband, who is without a doubt.
I'm going to break in, and I think every one of you will understand why, because I love the gal that sent this up here and said, if anyone has found a 6x9 3-ring black binder with forums in it for 68 or 69 to date, please leave it at the Eden Rock desk, signed Margaret. I think we'd all go on a searching party, Margaret, and look all over the place. We'll find it. John?
Hi, everybody. My name is John. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm powerless over alcohol. There used to be a TV program called Judge for the Defense. When I was finally pushed, pulled, and dragged into these steps, I was given one motto to live by, and that was to remember that the steps were a means to an end, and not an end in themselves. And in looking back, 1, 2, and 3, and only in looking back, were fairly easy, because all they said was that I could not sober up by myself, that God could sober me up, and on 3, I let him. I got to 4, and on 4 I turned the corner because I found John. I found freedom because for better or for worse, I knew myself. 5 may have been the big one because on this one I had to let down that false veneer. I had to allow another human being to see John as John really was. And why did I have to do this? Simply because I had come to believe that alcoholism was a disease of the attitudes, and that alcoholism came in people and not in bottles. And so to survive, change I must. And so I got up to 6, and I took off, and I worked on John, and I worked on all of John's defects and shortcomings. And I stressed the word I, because up until this point, this had been a we program for me. And nowhere in those steps does the word I appear. And so I gave up all of these defects and shortcomings for life. And I fell flat on my face. Finally, 7 was pointed out to me. And I was told, when all else fails, why don't you follow the instructions? And I was kind of puzzled. I looked down there and it said to ask. I said, all right, I'll ask. He said, no, there are a few little things on how you ask. You ask humbly. I said, well, you know, I have humility. It's a bit aggressive humility at times, but it's... I was told that I had to have no reservations. None at all. And boy, that word all gets into these steps in a few spots. And it's an absolute. And it's awful hard to swallow. And so humbly I tried to go at this. In the book it told me that it was very hard for any alcoholic to achieve humility who had not suffered complete and repeated humiliations. And I was well qualified. I got back in there. I got into the spiritual index. Because even at this point, this idea of God was still, it was there, but it was not at all formed. And so on that spiritual index, again, as I sort of did this tongue-in-cheek, this asking, it simply told me that there was one cardinal rule that was a stoppage to all growth and to all recovery. And that this rule simply was ridicule without investigation. But again, this was a negative. And I was always told to hang my head on something positive here. And so I looked back, and I realized that this higher power I was about to ask to help me had already helped me. He had made me a living miracle. He had lifted my obsession. He had restored me to a physical form of sobriety. And if he could do this for me, what else could he do if I would only step aside and let him and ask? And so I asked. And something else came in there. Finally, on the 7th step, I got the 24-hour program for John. The 24 hours for drinking I had managed to try to live by. But just for 24 hours or 24 minutes, or if I blow the whole show again, God, just let me start my day now and help me with this defect, the one that's most pressing. I finally realized that all the 7th step was prayer. But what would the prayer be? The prayer simply became, I'll row, God, but you steer. We got to 8, and 8 gave me one hell of a battle, or I gave 8 one hell of a battle. Because it was a list, and they kept hammering into my head, list, list, list. You don't have to do anything but write. There was a word in there that said, became willing. And this was pretty hard because, you see, I was sort of in an advanced class. I was not bothered with resentments. The things that were bothering me were pure hatred. And again, they drove in the old-timers who had led me by the hand and placed my feet in the steps that they had taken. And it said, you just have to be willing. Just be willing and remember that if the time comes when someone can say, let bygones be bygones. Be ready and be willing at that moment and ask God again. And so, I tried, and I wrote, and it was hard because that word all was there. And any time I balked on that word all in 7 or in 8, I was told to reflect and to go back to 2. Because to willingly hold on to any of this garbage would be a form of insanity. The eighth step has been a living step for me. First and foremost, as my wife pointed out, above all, long before the alcoholism had incapacitated me as a father and a husband, I had stolen time. I was on the sweet road of success, worshiping at the altar of self-sufficiency, and there was no time for family relationship or for wife. And so I tried in a way to rebuild a family. I thought I was doing fairly well on eight, and yet just no more than a few weeks ago, I added one other name to that list, a man that I felt a hurt from for many, many years. A man who, as I collapsed in alcoholism and deteriorated as a human being, stood by me. But even after 5 years, I could not see this clearly. And I still harbored, I guess it was a hate or a resentment or a self-pity over what he had done. And finally, glaringly, it came to me that what this man had done for me was to stand by me as I fell on my face and try to protect me. And in doing this, had forced himself into an early forced retirement. So you see, I did clear up a little bit after 5 years. And so in just summing this up, on eight, I was not asked to be a judge. I was not asked to be a juror. I was not asked to be a prosecutor. I was not asked to say if my actions were right or wrong or justified or deserved. It simply said, did you hurt anyone in your entire life? Are you willing to try to do something about it? And so on eight, I simply became a willing scribe. In conclusion, when I first came in, I heard the old Chinese saying, man takes drink, drink takes drink, and drink takes man. And I have now come to believe that man takes steps, steps take steps, and steps take man. Thank you and God bless you.
Two more old friends I've known for several years. We're going to have to move along. Dovey.
Is this right? I am Dovey, and I am a very grateful Al-Anon. I didn't get scared about all of this until 2 o'clock today. And then I began to get so scared. I've been hot and cold. But my husband, who knows me so well, I was going to try not to have to use my notes too much because I thought I had it well in hand. But he saw my nervousness, and as he does so often, he reached over and he says, honey, take your notes with you because they will give you security. So I have my security blanket. And also, I looked out, and I saw a few candles lit out there just for me, and I thank you. Now, we have steps 9 and 10. Steps 9 says, step 9 may direct demands to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Now, I was one of those righteous people who never drank and who really did no wrong. So it was kind of hard to know if to think I had to make amends. But if my husband would only stop drinking, there'd be no problem. We'd be right back in the honeymoon stage. And that did last for several years. Because I had stayed the same loving wife that I had always been. But I did keep asking myself, where did I go wrong? Why does he drink and associate with those drunks? But we were unable to have children, so I assured myself that that was why he drank. And I made all the excuses for him and for me to our relatives and friends. And it became easier to lie than to tell the truth. Paul had the flu almost constantly. Because no one could question it when you said he had the flu because they were afraid to come near because flu is contagious. So that kept them away. Now, I became such a false, shallow person that, and I, because you can't get hurt when everything is just surface. My attitude was, what's the use? So when it comes to making amends, I think I must put myself and Paul about first, and then others, because I was such a scared, confused person. I couldn't make a decision and stick to it. I just drifted along with the current, tossed about up on the rocks. And one, I used practice patience. And again, as he knew me so well, he came home one night in a not too sober state, but in a talking mood. And this night, he was trying to reason out how this alcohol had gotten hold up on him. And he said very calmly, which he could do, and says, "Honey, just have patience." Well, I came unbuckled because I had the patience of Job, I told him, because everybody had always told me that I had the patience of Job, and I believed them. And he said, far more sober than I, "No, you don't have patience, you only practice patience. Inside, you are in turmoil." And I thought, how true. So you see, he knew me even when he was drinking. So he wasn't critical when he made this remark, because I realized he only wanted to help. And I think I've told him a number of times, thanks. And for 2 years, I hated my oldest brother. My family have always been very close. So this was a thing I had never felt before, was hate. But my brother came by one night to see us, and or to stop by on his way home, and Paul was drunk. And he called me outside, and he said, "What can we do to help? Or what can I do to help? And what could be done about Paul's drinking?" Well, I put my chin up, and I said, "Paul is sick." And I didn't really know at that moment just how sick. But, and at that moment, I hated my brother because he stuck his nose into our affairs. And, but what else could he have done? Because that's all my brother knew to do. I knew he had us in his heart when he asked this. And it took me 2 years of hating my brother to come to the conclusion with God's help that I was able to forgive myself, and that when I could forgive myself, then I could forgive my brother. And it took me that long before I could go to my brother directly and make amends. I only did it because he could see. We were that close a family, he could see. And now I love him even more than I did before. The other relatives and friends, I chopped deliberately because they had no business implying that anything was wrong at our house. The hurt look on their faces deserved to be there because, you know, I did have to defend my home. This approach was very effective because they kept their distance. But who was I really harming most? Me. I shudder when I think of all the turmoil and frustration that was always inside of me at that time. It has taken a few years of asking God each day to just guide my thoughts and actions during this day, and feeling during the day that he has been close beside me. And now I don't have to have all these feelings of resentment toward people, and I don't have to always be on the defensive. But I can't take credit for this change in me, because all I did was turn myself over to the care of God. And proof came of this daily turning over, because I hadn't been one to put down on the paper what I wanted, just ask for guidance. And there were two people, again relatives, that always, there was always something every time I saw them. There was this personality conflict, you know, personality conflict. And all of a sudden, after about 8 months to a year, I was with these two people, and I felt very comfortable with them. And it made me realize that this wasn't of my doing, that God had done this for me. I think that I was like an exposed electric wire. that I was just waiting there for somebody to touch against me, and then fire would shoot out. And I believe that God connected this wire to the outlet plug and put a safety plate over it, so that now when contact is made, it comes through in controlled power, where it can help for comfortable living. But in order to keep this comfortable feeling, I must continue to take personal inventory. And it isn't too often that I need to make amends. When I can end my day and feel pleased with my behavior during that day, all is well. Some days I find I need to lend a helping hand to someone or to say a few words of encouragement. I try to do the things that I feel the urge to do because I think this is God's nudge. And when I don't fight within myself, I don't need to fight with others. I don't need to slam that door in anyone's face now. And I don't always have to put on this false front and say everything is fine, because that was always my pat answer, my chin up and everything is fine with a big smile. Now, when friends ask how are things, if we've had a frustrating day, I can just plain say I do. And that makes for real interesting conversation, because generally they say, gee, so was mine. And, you know, you can go on and on. And I have one prompt admission to make to our chairman. When we first got the letter from Henrietta inviting us, she gave us a choice of three steps. And, of course, we picked the three that we thought we were the most qualified to talk upon. Then when we get the letter from Paul L., he picks these two. And for a moment, the old me came out, and I said to my Paul, what the heck? Surely they could have given us one of the ones we asked for. And he sort of felt the same way. But then I, right quick again, this is what Al-Anon has taught me. Again, I thought almost immediately, no, these are the two steps that I need to work on a little. And this has given me a chance to do just that. So now I want to thank Paul for picking these steps for us. And I want to thank all of you for the love I feel out there. And I want to thank God. Thank you.
From short Al-Anon, dear. Well, I'm Paul, and I'm an alcoholic, and by the grace of God and the help of a lot of people, I'm a sober alcoholic today. I want you people all to know that I got all of my social drinking over and done with by the time I was 11 years old. I want to talk just a little bit, and you listen just a little bit, and I'm going to try to get through first. I got step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them and others. That's the one nobody wanted. I didn't hurt anybody with this step, and I didn't get hurt myself. I was very careful. When I first considered trying to do something about making amends, I realized that the ones that I wanted to make the most, I would never be able to. The people were dead or gone, I'd never see them again. I had to go back to step 8 where it says we became willing. And this gave me a little bit of a relief. Then I made direct amends to a person, and it was so successful that I wanted to go out at once and make amends to all the world. And then God in His wisdom gave me the thought, if I sincerely want to do this, the time and the place will come along. And I found this true in many instances. The time and the place was right. The amend worked wonderfully. I found that in working this step, like in all the things that we do in sincerely in AA, we reap the rewards and the benefits more than anyone else involved. However, I think the person that we make the amends to is benefited by our actions. There were two fellows I had known back home for about 20 years. This is an amend that went backwards. And in all this time, we'd done a lot of hunting and fishing, and hunting camps and hiking around over the mountains together, and people get to know each other around the campfire and the hunting camp pretty close. And it came a time that these fellows couldn't put up with my drinking any longer. Now, they drink, but they didn't drink like I did. And they did the only thing that they knew to do. They refused to have anything to do with me and refused to be around me. And I did things along it to last deliberately, to hurt them bad and to cut deep, because I knew they were going and I couldn't do anything about it. And they were last to go, and it hurt. Now, I missed them a lot because they were real good friends, and I missed them after I got into AA and sobered up. But for some reason, I couldn't go to them. I think it was false pride. I couldn't go to them and apologize and try to make amends. And I didn't. But I thought again, maybe someday the time will come. And it did. Now, I didn't go to them. They came to me. They invited me to go on an elk hunt. And we went. And ever since then, we've had many hunts together, and I've never seen a drink in camp. Now, they didn't come right back just as soon as I sobered up. They waited a while, 3 years. Now, the person that I wanted to make amends to in some way, because in hurting this person, it hurt me the most, because I had hurt them over the longest period of the time, and the one that I loved most was my Al-Anon wife, who stayed with me through all these miserable times and years. There have been a lot of wonderful things happened in my life since I've sobered up, but the most precious thing was when I saw the stars come back in Mommy's eyes. I knew then that I'd begun to make amends to her by just staying sober, and I was most grateful. But just to be sober, to me, wasn't enough, because there were many things I had been doing, had not been doing for a long time, and I needed to get back into action and face some responsibilities. Then there were a few unimportant things, like making a living. And you know, not once through all these miserable years did she threaten me with divorce. Not once. Murder occasionally, sure. Now, this step is not easy for me, but real rewarding. And I never think of step 9, but what I think of the book written by Bill, our co-founder, The AA Way of Life, where he writes, and I quote, "Somehow being alone with God is less embarrassing than to face up to another person." Now, I hear quite often someone in AA say, "I've worked the steps." Now, how do you work a step if the first word in it is continue? Continue to take personal inventory. And when we're wrong, promptly admit it. I will never have this step, or any of the others, worked. But I hope to keep them all with me, ever in mind, and keep using them and working them in our daily life. I like to think of going up the steps to sobriety and then down them to humility. Now, when it was first suggested to me that I take an inventory, I was like the little boy the first day in kindergarten class. And the teacher was giving instructions. She said, "Anybody that needs to go to the bathroom, just hold up your hand." The little boy says, "What good does that do?" And taking an inventory is of greatest importance. And it puts you in a place where you can do something about what you need to do. At least you can't plead ignorance. I don't think I'll ever have a day so perfect that nothing won't be wrong. Any action, any thought, or anything that I've done or said that won't need to be checked over for mistakes. But surely each day I will have done at least something right or something useful, and both sides, good and bad, I consider in my daily inventory. It doesn't do much good to take an inventory unless you get into action and do something about it. Sometimes when the whole world seems about to fall in and nothing goes well and my thinking starts to foul up, I have learned to stop long enough to take a quick inventory. Not of all my past, but a day's check, an hour's check, a right now check, and see what's bugging me so that it's fouling up my life at the moment and blocking me from following our path. And sure enough, I usually can lay my hands on something that can be corrected as soon as I discover what it is. Now, every evening, my wife cleans up the dishes and throws out the garbage. If she didn't continue to do this, soon our home would become so crowded and dirty we couldn't live in it. Soon the garbage would begin to smell. Later, it would begin to stink. And life in these surroundings would become unbearable. This was my personal life when I came to this wonderful program. I don't want that again, so I try to do daily and promptly what I need to do to stay sober, which is much easier than what I used to have to do to stay drunk. Now, I would like to thank all of those who had anything to do with my being on this wonderful Al-Anon program. First, I think it will be my Al-Anon wife, because she was the one that was invited, and I came along on AA, on green stamps, I guess. After I've become sober, I occasionally refer to her as my first wife. I don't know why. She's the only one I ever had, but it does kind of keep her on her toes. Then I want to thank all you other Al-Anons and say God bless you. Sometimes I think Al-Anons are just angels in disguise. And I want to ask God, and as I understand Him, that He keep me as I am today, just a little bit more grateful than gratified when given the privilege to be on an AA or Al-Anon program. God bless you and thank you.
The final couple. Mary, I met last October at the Louisville airport, another old friend. Brian, I met a few minutes ago. And Mary, would you come across over here?
You ever take 250 steps and never touch the floor? Hi, everybody. I am Mary Howell. Boy, that sounds great. That's what we do back in California. I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon. I'm originally from Texas, and I've been looking for Texans ever since I've been here. Is there any here?
Hey.
Hi. I'm sorry, Brian, but you don't have time. We were only given 9 minutes, you know, and I've only got three. I can't believe I'm here at one of the international conventions. It's really too much, and my heart is so full of gratitude. And I thank for Brian and I to have the two last steps. Is too much. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Before Al-Anon, I certainly didn't know how to pray. My prayers were, God, gimme. Or if you'll do this or that, I'll do this or that. Always a bargain. And as far as meditating, the only kind of meditating I did was pondering endlessly over whether my husband was going to come home or what he's doing. You know, something about him, that type of meditating. Wait till he gets home and I'll murder the guy, you know. Is that meditating? No. As a child, I was taught to fear God. Through prayer and meditation and you wonderful, wonderful people, I have found a God that I can love, that I can talk to just like I'm talking to you right now, that I can trust, that I don't have to be afraid of. I found a God that knows what's best for me. Lots of times I've had to let go and let God when things didn't go my way. And I don't know about you Al-Anons out there, but I was a camp director and everything had to go my way or else. I have found this beautiful God, and I feel him right now amongst us here. He's a God of love. And isn't it wonderful? I feel that all of you here are my friends. I don't know a stranger. I can go anywhere anymore and have instant friends. Today I pray only for the knowledge of His will for me. I don't have to bargain anymore. I don't have to ask, you know, give me this or that. I just ask for God's will to be done today, whatever that is. I no longer have to know why things happen the way they do. They just happen. And I've tried to live one day at a time and accept those things as they've happened. My prayer at night now is, please, God, thy will be done, not mine. Step 12 is having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. We tried to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. When I first found you people, I took 1, 2, 3, 12. But it doesn't work like that. We can't give something away that we don't have. But gee, I thought this was the greatest. My husband, fortunately, is in AA. But I have a mom and dad that are still practicing. And therefore, I've lived in the throes of alcoholism all of my life. And I had kept everything inside of me. I was unable to share it with anyone. And I came in talking, and I haven't shut up yet. Oh, I do listen occasionally. But I'm so grateful to get all this garbage out of me and to be able to share it with someone who has a problem just like me. I found out that until I took steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, I didn't start feeling a change in me, really. Then I could carry this message to others, try to carry it to others, and maybe, maybe, just maybe, I could help someone else. How grateful we should be for this beautiful step. I feel as if we were chosen people. Disciples, in a way. In practicing these principles in all my affairs, I can become an instrument of God's, helping others to find serenity, peace of mind, and untold happiness, which I'm still searching for, by applying and working these steps to the best of my ability one day at a time. Love has grown in me from this step. I didn't know how to love when I found you people. And I love all of you. There may be a few I don't like, but I can love you all, and it's just the greatest. My heart is so full of gratitude, I couldn't begin to tell you the beautiful things that have happened to me and the marvelous people that I've met and have been so instrumental in my life since I found you 9 years ago. One person that's helped me find God and serenity is Father Fred, who many of you know, I'm sure. He carries the message all over the United States in helping others and has worked with so many alcoholics and Al-Anons. I can meditate now anywhere. I was meditating a while ago to please let me accept having only 5 minutes. Thank you. I love you all. And God bless you.
Brian, you've noticed, just a second here, you've noticed me kissing these women. I'd like to kiss the men too.
I'm Bronson, I'm an alcoholic. And a very apprehensive alcoholic, I might add. You know, I'm sitting here an alcoholic and a member of AA, and I'm supposed to cap off an Al-Anon meeting, which caps off a fantastic series of Al-Anon activities this weekend. And a meeting which started with the gospel according to St. Paul and worked up. Step 11 and 12, as Mary pointed out, really do cap off the whole program. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And when I first came to this program, it was the biggest bunch of garbage I'd ever heard. To a totally materialistic mind, praying only for knowledge of God's will for me seemed to be a total waste of time. If you didn't have something to ask for or some jam to get out of, why bother? Obviously, my attitude's changed a little bit along these lines. It had to. It never occurred to me to utter a prayer to God, which merely said, "Thank you. Thank you, God." But through this very God's grace, in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, and in our lives, they're both inclusive, I have had many occasions to say, "Thank you, God," and this was my only prayer. You know, today, I haven't the foggiest notion what God's will for me is. I feel that the only thing I can do is pray for knowledge of God's will for me, and then just do the best I can with what I have. I also feel that just the desire to please God and the asking of His will does, in fact, please God. The 12th step, I feel, is the key to our everyday living. And it summarizes, I think, in three phases, the changes that have and must occur in our lives. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, this is the first phase of the step, and you can see that it presupposes we have taken some positive action on the other 11 steps. And it positively surmises that there has been a spiritual awakening or increased a spiritual awareness as the result. And I personally feel that it would be physically impossible to take positive action on all of the first 11 steps without having some type of spiritual awakening. And then we begin to look at our job and see how many ways we have dropped the ball. And there are many. And man, when we pick up the ball and start running with it on our jobs, fantastic things begin to happen. None of us can believe it, you know. And it really works things out. And then we begin to look around our community and assume a certain amount of responsibility as citizens of a community. And this is where the